it was kind of weird to me to think that Hawaiian was so ignored, because that was part of who I am, and we meaning my family. I knew, of course, as I grew up, Japan was very Japanese, and this place, Hawaii, was not very Hawaiian.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a decades-long fight to keep a language alive. A piece from our radio friends at Code Switch. There are an estimated 7,000 distinct languages in the world, but researchers say nearly half are in danger of extinction. One language dies about every 2 weeks. This is what almost happened 2 generations ago with the Hawaiian language. Today, we're going to hear how the preservation of this native language was started by one man who was not a native Hawaiian speaker. And it brings up what we can learn about preserving our own language and traditions. The story comes to us from Code Switch, a podcast about race and culture. Host Shireen Marisol Meraji spent a couple of weeks in Hawaii reporting the story of Larry Kimura and the Hawaiian language. And Shireen joins me now on Latino USA. Hey, Shireen.
It's been too long.
I know. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
So, Shireen, I'm fascinated by this story. It's a great story. What interested you and said, okay, I'm going off to Hawaii to tell this story?
Well, first of all, I'm obsessed with language loss because, Maria, I've experienced it myself and I've seen what it has done to members of my own Puerto Rican family, especially after my family moved to the mainland United States. Many of the second generation mainland Puerto Ricans in my family, like myself, we speak subpar Spanish. Our Spanish is terrible. And there are a lot of reasons for that. In my case, my parents are from two different cultures, you know, Shireen, Marisol Meraji. So my dad's from Iran, my mom's from Puerto Rico. So English really was the language that they had in common. But this is something that happened to my cousins who had parents who both spoke Spanish, you know, they lost their language. And I think the idea was, when we were being raised, was the more you assimilated, the more you would succeed, and the more you would avoid racism, which we know is not true.
So tell me more about what's going on with Hawaii.
In Hawaii, there is a small group of Hawaiians who've been fighting to keep Hawaiian alive, and these are Native Hawaiians. And the more reporting that I did about this story, once I found out about it, the more interesting it became, because these Hawaiians were like me in that they were second language Hawaiian speakers. Like, they weren't fluent in their native language. But unlike me, they were keeping their language from dying completely. They were taking on something so massive, and they weren't even fluent in their language.
So one of the people who you meet is a guy by the name of Larry Kimura. He grew up in Hawaii speaking English. His dad was from Japan. His mom was native Hawaiian.
Both of my parents never used their first language with us, their children.
So why is Larry Kimura essentially being credited now with saving the Hawaiian language?
That's a very long story.
Okay.
But in his mid-20s, he ended up teaching Hawaiian to second language speakers in Hawaii as a college professor. But he told me his interest in his culture and his language, that started long before that. He was a kid who grew up in the 1950s in Hawaii. And he said then everything around him was pushing him to assimilate. It was pushing him to forget his Hawaiian roots. But he was pushing back. He's 73 now, and he told me he was reminiscing about all this with his younger brother.
He said, we used to go and watch the cowboy and Indian shows at our local theater, and you would be cheering for the Indians. And I said, yes. And I remember when we played cowboy and Indian, I always wanted to be the Indian.
You were just always drawn to the more indigenous side of you.
Yes, yes.
You know, Maria, in the 1980s, Hawaii had only 50 native Hawaiian speakers under the age of 18. And this is when Larry Kimura was teaching. And Larry, along with a small group of his former students, they set out to change that. And as we know, the task ahead of them was daunting. They were going to save their language, their ancestral language, while they were still learning how to speak it.
All right, so Shireen, tell us how the Hawaiian language was kept from dying.
Yeah. Larry Kimura.
Yeah, this is me. I'm
in Kamehameha Schools Preparatory Department.
Yeah. I'm in Larry's office flipping through an old Hawaiian language workbook from middle school he had sitting on a shelf.
My spelling was bad. Oh, this is really terrible. This is in October.
What school? Hale Pula?
Kula. Hale Kula. My handwriting is terrible. What? Heaha.
You've come a long way, Mr. Kimura.
I hope so.
Larry's got a full head of white hair, but that's the only thing that hints at his 73 years. He's sprightly, laughs easily, and on this day, he's wearing a faded purple Hawaiian shirt tucked into a pair of jeans. He was 13 when he took his first Hawaiian class and says he remembers thinking back then that the teacher wasn't taking it seriously enough. He called it Hawaiian light.
And it was meant to be light, but I just said, if you're going to teach Hawaiian, you should teach it, you know, the way it should be taught.
As if
I knew, you know, what it was, because I didn't even speak it.
And now, Kaleo, Hawaii.
Fast forward 13 years, and Larry has his own radio show.
Aloha e Hawaii.
All in Hawaiian.
This program is produced by the students at the University of Hawaii's Hui Aloha Aina Tuahine.
It started in 1972, and it was called Kaleo Hawaii, the voice of Hawaii. And it was hosted by a then 26-year-old Larry Kimura, who was a professor at the University of Hawaii, and his students helped him produce it. We're listening to Larry's earliest attempt at saving the language and culture he knew was in danger. Recording the elders before they passed away. Like this one, Johnny Almeida, a Hawaiian musical icon born in 1897. He was 75 years old when Larry interviewed him, and they listened to some of his music together. Johnny Almeida died in 1985. Kaleo Hawaii was a teaching tool, and not just for Larry's students, but for everyone listening who spoke enough Hawaiian to get the gist of what was being said on the show. And Larry knew this because he strengthened his fluency by hanging around the old folks in his family.
And then I could ask direct questions, you know, about how do you say this? And they would tell me. My grandmother had all these 78 records, you know, those are the kind of records they had on Hawaiian music. I couldn't quite understand. Tell me, what are they singing about? Turned out to be a lot of adult type love songs,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I assumed Larry's grandma and aunties and uncles would be overjoyed that he would take so much interest in learning Hawaiian. But he told me it's complicated.
Were they proud of you? Did they ever say?
No. I don't know. No.
No?
I don't know if it was a Hawaiian thing to do. In fact, I used to ask my mother, how did you learn your Hawaiian? She said, we heard it. And I remember when I started to really use Hawaiian, I mean, I would begin to speak to her too. She would start in speaking Hawaiian back to me, and then she would sort of stop or give up. Change into English, and I'd say, why are you not continuing speaking Hawaiian? Then she'd say to me, you're speaking it too good for me to speak it back to you. I think it was a bit confusing for her to see that happen. English was understood to be the most critical thing about being successful.
That reticence to speak Hawaiian was super common. And can in part be traced back to Hawaii's colonial history. In 1893, a U.S.-backed coup overthrew Hawaii's Queen Liliuokalani. Soon after, use of the Hawaiian language was completely banned in government and in schools. We heard stories from so many people about their grandparents and their great-grandparents being beaten and belittled for speaking Hawaiian.
Cry for the gods, cry for the people, cry for the land that was taken away. And then yet you'll find Hawaii.
We're listening to the late Israel Kamakaviva'ole singing a song he made famous called Hawaii 78. And the 70s marked a time of renewed pride in Hawaiian culture and identity. You heard that newfound pride in the music from that time. You saw it in the resurgence of hula. And there was also this revival of the Hawaiian way of seafaring and farming.
That our land is in great, great danger now.
The 70s is really part of that whole Hawaiian Renaissance. You know, we were part of the generation where the women were burning their bras and civil rights, you know, and people were asking, well, how come I can't speak the language of my grandparents? How come they have this and I don't have that? Aloha, my name is Keiki Kawai'aia. I am the director for Kahakaula o Ke Alikolani College of Hawaiian Language, where we are right now, here at the University of Hawaii Hilo campus.
Keiki Kawai'aia is Larry Kimura's boss, and we're in her huge light-filled office just upstairs from his. But in the late 1970s, she was Larry's student, taking fourth-year Hawaiian.
And I really wanted to learn Hawaiian well, because I had this big, grand idea that one day when I had children, that Hawaiian would be their first language. So I had to take the first leap to make sure I had enough proficiency in my language so that I could do that.
Growing up, were you speaking Hawaiian?
I had some Hawaiian in my home, words, simple phrases, but not fluent. The only fluency I heard were from my grandparents. My grandparents were that very first generation when they were in school. They actually used to get hit, humiliated. So when my grandparents had my father, that generation, the majority of that generation did not speak Hawaiian to their children. They were really afraid.
But Keiki was afraid of something else.
Well, if we don't really pay attention, we will have nothing in our language to pass to our children. And with that is a tumbling domino effect of our songs, our ways, our practices, our arts, our culture, because the language holds all of that intact.
For those of you who might have studied abroad in Mexico or Argentina or Spain to help you regain your fluency in Spanish, that's not something Keiki could do. Hawaii is the only place Hawaiian is spoken. So if it stops being spoken, it's gone.
You know, once it gets wiped out, that's it.
In 1978, Hawaiian was added to the state constitution as an official language, a huge win that resulted from the Hawaiian cultural renaissance of the 60s and 70s, but a win in name only, if almost no one could actually speak Hawaiian. And Professor Larry Kimura knew taking Hawaiian as a second language in college or high school was not going to fix the problem. His radio show, Kaleo Hawaii, was not going to fix the problem.
Yeah, it wasn't enough. It was important to have that, but it wasn't going to do it, yeah.
He says he'd been teaching Hawaiian at the university level for over a decade when he came to that conclusion.
Students come, students go. Students come, students go. Where do the students go? Are they applying it? Are they using it? No. Maybe some of them became teachers of Hawaiian, but that's not going to bring it back to the home and the community.
To do that, Hawaii needed a new generation of speakers whose first language was Hawaiian. This, he says, would be the most natural way to bring it back.
Which is really wasn't natural, but as natural as possible.
So in the 1980s, Larry and a small group of other second language learners decided to open a preschool. They called it Punana Leo, Nest of Voices, or Nest of Language. Everything was in Hawaiian, no English allowed, which wasn't easy. They needed to develop curricula in Hawaiian for little kids, which didn't exist. They had to create new words because they didn't exist. Hawaiian hadn't been used as an everyday language for most people in Hawaii in almost a century. And they had to change laws. Even after Hawaiian was made an official language in 1978, there was still a federal law on the books that banned its usage as a language of instruction in public schools, which technically meant you couldn't use the Hawaiian language to teach anything, including Hawaiian. Larry says, with all they were up against,
the hardest part was how do we get a family to allow us to have their child for the day or the week or the months?
There was immense pressure from critics who thought centering Hawaiian would hold these kids back from succeeding in an English-speaking society. Some of those critics were family members. That's what nearly a century of colonial history had taught them. Here's Keiki Kawai'ai again.
People wondered if our children would be able to read and write and speak English because they were being raised in Hawaiian.
Despite all this, Keiki and her husband made the decision to raise their kids in a Hawaiian-only home in the 1980s.
There were only about half a dozen of us who were doing that, so it was kind of an isolated feeling. And then as the Punana Leo preschool started to open and we started to gather around this common idea of our children being Hawaiian speakers, so launched our movement.
When the toddlers in the Punana Leo were ready for kindergarten, they created a kindergarten. And when it was time for first grade, they made a first grade and so on until they reached 12th grade. Keiki's daughter graduated with the first class of this experimental new school called Ke Kula o Navahio Kalani Opu'u, Navahi for short. That was 20 years ago. Navahi's class of 1999 had 5 graduates, and its mission was then, and still is, bring Hawaiian back.
The Hawaiian language shall live, Eola Ko'ula Hawaii. That's all.
That's Navahi's principal.
And we had to hurry up because time was working against us. We were like 100 years late, you know?
We'll meet her after the break. Because that's where we're headed.
Coming up on Latino USA.
The language is always the core of what Navahi is about. Always, always. It cannot be anything else.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller isn't getting his wish. He's set to testify about his investigation into Russian interference and possible obstruction of justice by President Trump. Afterwards, the NPR Politics podcast is going to be there to break down everything you need to know about what he says.
We're back with Shireen Marisol Meraji from NPR's Code Switch, who's telling us about a group of Hawaiians who set out to keep the native Hawaiian language alive.
And they decided the best way to do that was to start at the beginning. Teach the babies. Our brains are better at learning languages the younger we are. So knowing that, they created a nonprofit preschool program that turned into a full-fledged public school where all of the instruction is in Hawaiian, all of it. English is taught as a second language. It was really hard to believe that in the mid-'80s,
there were only a handful of kids enrolled in the preschool, the Punana Leo, here on the Big Island. Because when we got to Nawahi, there were more than 400 kids outside greeting us. A sophomore stepped forward named Aipono Valenti and gave a passionate speech about how the students were facing down huge obstacles to bring back Hawaiian. He related their journey to an ancient Hawaiian story about Hiiaka, the goddess of hula. She took a journey of her own through a forest home to a treacherous monster. Hiiaka's advisors told her to take the safe route through the forest, but she refused and killed the monster who stood in her way. And then it was our turn to be introduced. We spent the day on campus, saw babies as young as 9 months old learning Hawaiian through music. We visited different classes. That's a student telling us we're in fifth grade math. The kids were learning about the metric system. We watched the middle school students practice hula during gym.
O Kawanoe, Kamana Ko'ui Noa. I am the principal of Kekula o Nawahi o Kalani Opu.
Kawanoe, the principal of Nawahi, was one of Professor Larry Kimura's students and a part of that original group that decided they were not letting Hawaiian die on their watch.
And we were all second language learners. And some people say, well, you know, that's not native fluency. But for us, that's what we had, you know. You work with what you have. So for the majority of the families who signed up at the beginning, they were not speakers yet. They became speakers in the course of being together over the years. And then they became teachers.
What you observe really fast at Nawahi is that this is still a family affair. A lot of teachers and students are related. Same goes for the rest of the staff. Kaunoi married her college sweetheart. They met studying Hawaiian, and they were a part of that first group of families who brought Hawaiian back into the home. It was their children's first language. Kaunoi's eldest son was a part of Nawahi's very first graduating class in 1999. So Kaunoi is really serious about how this school is not your typical language immersion school. It's a way of life.
Other people come to this school, but the program is set up for families who use Hawaiian as the language of the home, and this is the school that they come to. The language is always the core of what Nawahi is about, always, always. It cannot be anything else. Everything else comes after.
Three boys blow into conch shells to mark the end of the school day for the kids.
The pencil is on the table. How do we start? Aya.
But on Thursday nights, school's back in session for the adults. Nawahi has four levels of Hawaiian to help parents who want to speak more with their children at home. We're in level one. And tonight, everyone's learning how to ask where something is and how to answer that question. Where's the pencil? The pencil's on the table. Where are my soccer cleats? Your cleats are in the garage. Basic things kids might ask at home.
So find a partner. Each one of you comes up with three questions.
There are about a dozen adults in level one this evening. Most are dads. I cornered a few after class.
Aloha. My kind of Mitchell Peters.
Oh, my name is Earl Ka'ivi.
And what brings you to class?
I live the Hawaiian life, but I don't talk too much Hawaiian, so I'm just grateful that they have this class for us parents so we can pick up and learn along with our kids.
Because I'm outnumbered at my house.
Who else is outnumbered at their house? Are you outnumbered too?
My name is Tai Makanui. I'm a father of two children. And along like Mitch, I'm outnumbered at home because my wife, she works at the Hawaiian Language College.
Did your wife make you feel like you had to come here, or are you coming on your own volition?
No, I'm coming on my own to learn so I can converse with my kids and understand what they're saying, talk stories and stuff. But then, you know, my oldest one, he's way more advanced because he's already in Papahikahi, the first grade. Mm-hmm. And then he's always correcting me. He'd go, no, that's not correct. You're not saying it. So I always go back to English.
These guys are learning Hawaiian much later in life. Tai and Earl are in their 40s, and Mitchell's in his late 50s.
Do you feel like it's changed you in any way, learning more Hawaiian?
I guess Hawaiians have a very deep culture. It helps you reconnect.
For me, it brought me, I guess, closer to the land, to the people. My grandma was pure Hawaiian, but she always told me that they wasn't allowed to talk Hawaiian. It was kind of like they was banned from talking Hawaiian. She felt like I needed to learn English. Now I'm trying to learn Hawaiian. It's not easy for learning at this age.
Tai told a similar story to Earl's. When he was a kid, he'd help out at his uncle's taro patch with his cousins, and he remembers the old folks talking to each other in Hawaiian.
But in same like him, they would say, like, no, we're not teaching you guys. They look down on you guys if you guys learn the language. It wasn't, I guess, popular, you could say, like how it is now.
The very popular language learning app, Duolingo, added Hawaiian to its roster of languages in October of 2018. And today, in Hawaii, there are a dozen Punanaleo preschools and nearly two dozen other schools that are referred to as Hawaiian immersion, which can mean different things. Right now, Navahi is the only campus where a child can go from 9 months old all the way through high school entirely in Hawaiian.
Aloha! Good morning! Hi.
One thing everyone we spoke with stressed was that in order for a language to thrive, it can't be stuck in a classroom. So we visited one of the Navahi families that use Hawaiian in their home. Mom, Pele Harmon, and Dad, Kekoa Harmon, have dedicated their lives to fortifying their culture. Pele teaches 5th and 6th grades at Navahi. Kekoa is an associate professor of Hawaiian language and Hawaiian studies at the University of Hawaii's Hilo campus. Both teach hula after school 4 days a week, and they've raised all three of their kids in Hawaiian. It was 6:45 a.m. when we showed up at their house. Everyone was getting ready for school or work, pouring coffee, cracking open cans of green tea, warming up cheese danishes, and finally sitting around the kitchen table to check in about what's for dinner, after school plans, weekend plans. Typical family stuff. I had a chance to speak with Pele and her oldest daughter, who graduates this year as Navahi's valedictorian.
So, kala mana mana, kala is the sun, and then mana mana, rays. So, rays of the sun, that's what my name means.
They're sitting right next to each other. Both daughter and mother have beautiful white flowers in their dark hair.
She's always been a morning person. You know, the sun rises and so does she. Now at night, it's a totally different story. She takes on the persona of maybe a elderly person at night.
Kala mana mana is definitely that firstborn child the parents rely on to be the responsible caretaker. She gets good grades, she looks out for her little brother and sister, and she's also the first of her family in 2 generations to grow up speaking Hawaiian as her first language. Her parents, Pele and Kekoa, started learning Hawaiian in college in the 90s.
When we started our family, we decided, okay, we're all in. We're going to, for both of our families, we're going to reclaim Hawaiian as our language. Yeah, and so that's where Kala Mana Mana was raised. That was her first language growing up. And after that, the rest of our children, we have a son, Kaumuali'i. How old is he? He's 13. 13 going on 30. He thinks he's older than that. And then Nali'i Po'imoku, our youngest daughter, who's 12. Within both of our families, we would have had, you know, 2 generations of a gap of not being able to speak our language. And then seeing that in our kids, it really is a blessing to have been able to watch them grow up and see the world in a very different way that I think would have been more in line with the way that my great-grandmother saw the world around her, with a better understanding of Hawaii. What was it like growing up? Because she had no choice, you know, we just kind of forced her to do it.
Sometimes, I guess, family members who didn't speak Hawaiian had a hard time understanding me because I was always mixing Hawaiian and English. So that was kind of difficult for me at times to communicate with others. But through being a part of Kikula o Navahi o Kalani Opu'u, being a student here, has given me a lot of blessings, being enriched in my Hawaiian language and my culture, understanding where my ancestors came from. It was I know it was very difficult for her. I mean, she had to learn the Hawaiian language later in life. And I know that I have a responsibility to work hard for my mother and my father, because they worked hard to put me and my siblings in this sort of education, and I'm very grateful for that.
But he can't allow them to talk.
They're looking at one another and talking in Hawaiian, and both of them have tears in their eyes. Kalamanamana is a member of Navahi's 20th graduating class, soon to be a freshman at Dartmouth College, a world away in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to go, huh?
Yeah.
And I talked more about that big step with her mom, Pele, after she left to catch the bus.
Oh, gosh. It's so funny because I rarely get to hear her speak English, you know?
I asked Pele how she felt about her daughter leaving for college, knowing she most likely won't encounter another Hawaiian speaker in New Hampshire, so she probably won't be speaking the language day in and day out, and knowing there's absolutely no guarantee she'll move back to Hawaii after college.
It'll allow her to spread her wings a little bit, learn as much as she can, and then come back and help our people move our language forward, move our culture forward. Our school motto is No Ane'i Ko Kakoola, which means that No Ane'i, we're from this place, and this is the place that has given us life. Another poetic, I guess, way of putting it is Kula'iwi, which is the land of the bones of my ancestors. And so, to answer your question, that was a really long one. She'll be back. She'll be back.
Is the language still in danger, in your opinion, after all of this work?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, English is so too strong. Still is too strong.
Professor Larry Kimura is referred to these days as the grandfather of the Hawaiian language revitalization movement. And he's still worried about the fate of Hawaiian. When they decided to start that Punana Leo, that preschool, there were about 50 native speakers under the age of 18. And it's hard to get a good handle on the numbers today, but one study from a few years back estimated there were more than 5,000 fluent Hawaiian speakers under the age of 18. That's progress. But Professor Kimura says you still can't do basic things yet, like walk into any bank or post office or grocery store and speak Hawaiian, let alone government offices or the courts. It's one of Hawaii's official languages, after all. So he says the next step is for these young people who graduate from Navahi to push for Hawaiian to be spoken all over Hawaii. So speaking the language isn't unique. It's normal. And ultimately, he hopes no one will even know there was a decades-long struggle to make it that way.
Hopefully, nobody's going to remember how it all came to be.
That's the hope.
Yeah, that would be the hope.
Our thanks to Shireen Marisol Meraji from NPR's Code Switch for that story.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Shereen Marisol Meraji, Leah Danella, Kumari Devarajan, and Maria Paz Gutierrez. It was edited by Leah Danella and Steve Drummond with help from Sarah Kealani-Gu. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Antonia Ceregido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. We're edited by Fernanda Camarena and Sofia Palizaca. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our interns are Lucas Southard and Jonathan Cabral. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. W.K. Kellogg Foundation. A partner with communities where children come first. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
This episode was perused. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, you might not have known his name a year ago, but you probably know it now. They call him Mayor Pete, and he's taken the race for the Democratic presidential nomination by storm. My conversation with Pete Buttigieg, that's next time on Latino USA.